Will he become a living dead?
Well, he might be.
Stand back. I'll shoot him now.
Hey, I only said it's possible. I think we can cure him.
Huh? Is that possible? What do you need, Sifu?
Sticky rice, band-aids and a New York specialist, and a flamethrower.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 81. And happy Halloween, because this show is Halloween-themed, in a way. And you'll find out why, but let me introduce the gang who's gathered up this evening. My name is Kenneth Blossom, I'll be your host, and as usual, Stuart Sutherland is in the room.
Hello.
And before we introduce our third guest, let's track back a little to a two-year special, which is about a year ago. We had a vision, or Mike Banner, the Korean exile, if you will, had a vision that we should get some ladies onto the show, a female perspective, and as you might have heard, we got one, and she volunteered, so...
There was no abduction.
No abduction whatsoever, so I'm going to mangle your name, so I'll just let you introduce yourself.
My name is Amber Skronsky. I'm a special effects artist in Los Angeles. I worked on Hellboy 2, I worked on Tron recently, and the always fabulous Big Mama's House films, which are, that's probably the jewel in my crown, really.
Well, we can draw sort of a comparison to what we've been talking about on the show to Hellboy 2, because it's come up every now and again. Maybe when we discussed, I guess, Luke Goss on a show or two, which is a good piece of discussion because Luke is very good in Hellboy 2. So that's very cool. And coming back to why it's a Halloween show, we had a small thought of what should we do for Halloween? Should we do anything for Halloween? And I just thought to myself, I'm going to take credit for this idea, vampire season. And that would be really Mr. Vampire season. So Stu and I have been, we mentioned Mr. Vampire every other show, really, and the entire series and any movie with a hopping vampire or Lam Ching Ying in, and even the old Lam Ching Ying special was put up on the site not so long ago as a reminder of what we're doing right now. So it's vampire season, and it's Mr. Vampire this evening, all Mr. Vampire. And I'm going to hog the spotlight for a little while too before we get into the discussion, because the first movie in this series, the one that really deserves the most background, because we need to track back a little into Hong Kong cinema history, Chinese cinema history, and stop in 1985 and have a good old fun discussion of that. So, and by the way, guys and girls, interrupt me whenever you like if you have anything you need to add, anything I've forgotten. I'm sure I've done poor research, so just interrupt me at any time. So I had a thought to myself, how far back can you go and find horror in Hong Kong cinema? And I went back as far as 1965. You can probably go way, way, way back. And I read up on a movie called Fairy Ghost Vixen, produced at Cafe Studios. This film was based on this huge collection of supernatural stories by a scholar called Pu Song Ling, who wrote a 500 stories collection translated as Strange Stories from a Chinese Studio. It's been the basis for stories covered in A Chinese Ghost Story and the likes of A Touch of Zen. It's a huge template of these kind of ghost stories, not horror stories as such, but ghost stories. And I bet you two have seen A Chinese Ghost Story at least 5 or 10 times.
Sure.
But also, I forgot in my initial research to even think of the likes of The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires.
Oh.
The Great Hammer Shaw production as another mix of martial arts and horror, and that's also where Mr. Vampire comes in. It mixes acrobatic abilities and horror and also comedy. But 10 years earlier, there was someone who attempted to do that mix, albeit not very successfully in my opinion, and it was The Spiritual Boxer, directed by Lau Garland at Shaw Brothers, which had, if my memory serves me correctly, it had supernatural elements, but Wong Yu, not Jimmy Wang Yu, but Wong Yu, played a con man of some sort. So he said he had powers, and basically he was a con man. But that mix had really never been seen distinctly before. So I'll stop right there. Did any of you had a chance to see the remaster of Spiritual Boxer that was released a few years ago?
Yeah, definitely. I like the sequel much more, but I enjoy it. I like Wong Yu.
Not many people seem to dig Wong Yu as such, even though he's part of many classic movies.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for him a little bit. He's had kind of a sad history and stuff. I like him. You know, I like him better than Jimmy Wang Yu.
Ooh. Gosh.
He rubs me the wrong way. He just seems like a total prick. I don't know.
Well, that is true for Jimmy Wang Yu, I think. The stories surrounding him are very much true, but I'm too much of a fan of him kicking ass on screen.
He does kick ass.
It's not like he did 10 rapist movies and turned out to be a prick in real life. Then it would be kind of hard. did you ever pick up the Spiritual Boxer still amidst the 5,000 Celestial DVDs that was released?
Yeah, that was one of the remastered ones that actually made it over to the United Kingdom and soon ended up in like the bargain bins.
Yeah, it was priced heavy, like £20 and up or something like that initially, which is unacceptable for any DVD 5 years ago or even 10 years ago.
And like within months, you were able to pick up 3 of them for £10. And of course, that's when I struck. So, but yeah, it was harmless. I think I got a laugh out of it, but it's the sequel. It's the sequel I've been waiting to see, and I keep forgetting about it.
Which is the shadow, shadow boxing.
Yeah,
I believe. I didn't really dig the sequel, but then again, much of Shaw Brothers' work and Lau Garlung's work is, you know, none is really bad and painful to get through.
Mm-hmm.
It's big Shaw Brothers studio, and that's watchable regardless of the movie, really.
I thought Lau Garlung was really good in the shadow boxing.
Oh yeah, I was in that too, and Go, the almost the entire so-called Lau family was in it. Gordon Liu was in it again, and all of that. So, due for a rewatch, I guess, because I admire Lau Garlung very much, and this was a trend start of such, but it kind of gets buried or was buried up until the remaster came out, which is not that illogical because the Shaw Brothers library wasn't really made public on home video until basically 2002, I believe. The Celestial deal started taking in effect, and Spiritual Box was just known in fan circles, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But one movie that really got a reputation kind of early on, I guess, and enjoys a great reputation still is Sammo Hung's Encounters of the Spooky Kind, aka Spooky Encounters. But I like Encounters of the Spooky Kind much more. I just love, it's a simple play on words. Echoing a known title, but wow, here is a mix of great comedy, great martial arts with Sammo's great stunt team, but also the mix of gruesome horror.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of the opening reel, obviously, the nightmare has these rotting corpses, and that great scene where Sammo wakes up next to this maggot infested corpse that echoes his every movement. There we have that great mix of comedy and horror, and just a movie that kicks ass every time. A movie you've both seen, yeah?
Yes. I watched that when I was on a Sammo Hung kick, and of course it's one of my favorites because of just the horror element, because I'm such a big horror fan anyway. Mm. And it is a little bit more gruesome, I guess, than some of the other horror comedies, a little bit more.
Yeah. And it got a great Lam Ching Ying performance in it. That's the most stubborn cop in the world, until Billy Lau in Mr. Vampire.
I actually saw that before Mr. Vampire, before I had seen, I think before I had seen Encounter to the Spooky Kind, I had only seen him in sort of hanging out in the background in Shaw Brothers movies. You know, he'd have his one fight, you know, henchman number two or something like that.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of an introduction to him for me. It's a great movie.
And he's funny too. It's that great scene where he's forced to look into the coffin that he thinks a rotting corpse is in. It's actually Sam who's in it. And he opens it, closes his eyes, closes the lids, and then fakes that he's seen the most disgusting corpse. And it's that great wah reaction that you get out of Hong Kong movies. That's Sammo's great trendsetter, his great contribution to Hong Kong horror martial arts cinema. And here we are at 1985. And Mr. Vampire was produced by Sammo after a few years of making sure different actors and action actors and actresses had broken in 80s Hong Kong cinema, the likes of Michelle Yeoh and Cynthia Rothrock. And now it was Lau Xingying's turn under the producing skills of Sammo to break through, and a new Hong Kong cinema trend was started. To give a little background on Lam Xingying, we have discussed it in detail, so I'll just do a brief here. He was a former stuntman for Bruce Lee, of course, can be seen in The Big Boss as one of the cousins. Fairly visible role. It's not henchman number two. It's a role. He has dialogue. And later was part of Sammo's stunt team. You can, as you said, Amber, probably see him in the background, and he probably shared a lot of action directing credit on these films, credited or uncredited, probably, because he was part of the whole stunt team. And we will be discussing The Dead and the Deadly, me and Stuart, on a future commentary, but we really consider that a great breakthrough, because it's such a great role for Lam Xingying as the 220-year-old Taoist priest, essentially. Because he's so old and he's so frail in that movie, and they have to carry him to the altar for him to do his various routines there. And it's a great image of Lam Xingying really, really old. So that was Lam Xingying as the Taoist priest, a bona fide classic image in Hong Kong cinema, and a bona fide and classic image from that film is also the sight of the hopping vampires, which I'm sure induced a snicker or two when you first saw that, but a snicker or two based on really the entertainment level of it all. But it had been seen before a little bit here and there, and a movie I saw a few months ago that had it unexpectedly, because the movie was called The Shaolin Brothers, a movie by Joseph Kuo, who did Seven Grandmasters and Mystery of Chess Boxing. Their opening reel has hopping vampires, a priest transferring these hopping vampires across the land in slow motion, and it really never gets a good payoff, because it's a weak, very ordinary martial arts movie from Taiwan. But The Shaolin Brothers, you don't expect any horror element to come out of that one, so wow. But I don't recommend anyone watching The Shaolin Brothers. Robert, you should watch Seven Grandmasters and Mystery of Chess Boxing if you want to see good Joseph Kuo movies. Go jumping ahead to Mr. Vampire again, we have a Golden Harvest production, or they distributed it, really. It was Boho Films that produced it, Sammo's company, and it was directed by Ricky Lau, who will be very familiar with during this vampire season, because he directed pretty much all the good vampire movies, all the good Mr. Vampire movies. Or really, he directed all of them, so that doesn't make sense at all. but really, Ricky Lau never had that much of a distinctive career outside of these movies. He has some good movies to his credit. A movie called Nocturnal Demon sounds very much in the vein of Mr. Vampire, but it's really one of those classic Hong Kong cinema movies that has pretty much everything you could ask for, or pretty much element also that you don't want to see in movies at the same time. Because it's a combination of a nasty murder plot with scenes of the killer urinating on his victims. And there's Mahjong playing, there's an adorable Moon Lee on roller skates fighting Yun Wah and Kor Yun, and very intolerable and very tolerable at the same time. So that's a question me and Stuart discussed many times, but I'll ask you, Amber, this mix that Hong Kong cinema provides, you know, the comedy, the horror, the martial arts, are you a fan of that mix?
Yeah, I very much am. I just, it can go so wrong, though. It can go so wrong sometimes. But, you know, even when they're bad, I still kind of like them.
Hell yeah.
You know, there's something about it that, you know, I'm not going to turn it off. I'll keep with it till the end. You know?
Well, especially from an 80s, the 80s era and partially the 90s era, this mix is kind of outrageous, tolerable, and intolerable. And I'm with you. I can endure much badness from back then if I do find it bad. But nowadays, I can easily turn off movies produced just a few years ago. And it's not really about them featuring, you know, the rapes and the mahjong playing and the martial arts. It's just that movies are not tolerable anymore. I watched Ming, the Daniel Wu Chow Jun movie. And after 30 minutes, I was so mad, I didn't know what to do with myself. It was just a pretentious MTV, Matrix, French cinema kind of a mixture. And it was just, is this art? So what I did is I put on a Bruce Bloitation movie instead, and I was nice.
That cleansed your palate a little bit, huh?
Hell yes, I watched Bruce Lee fighting a bull. So
that'll do it.
Yes. Mr. Vampire again, success at the box office and at the award ceremony the following year at the Hong Kong Film Awards, winning Best Original Film Score, which meant this didn't borrow that much music from other movies. They actually composed music, apparently, and I believe Anders Nelson is credited as one of the composers for this. Famous musician in Hong Kong, but he can be seen in Way of the Dragon as well. I think he's one of the thugs that Bruce Lee fights, not in the alley as such, but one of the fights against various Western guys. Anders Nelson is a blonde, thin guy that gets a nunchuck to the head, I think, or something like that. The final two notes on Mr. Vampire is stolen right from Wikipedia, so I'll trust them in this case, but it's really the traits of a hopping vampire, Gung Si, because, again, it created giggles and fascination at the same time when this movie was seen by so many people around the world. So a few notes that you recognize from movies, I bet, when I read them. So, explained as being reanimated corpses that hop around, killing living creatures to absorb life essence. Again, that they are looking for human breath. You can see that in Mr. Vampire. The Gung Si is said to be created when a person's soul fails to leave the deceased body due to improper death, suicide, or it just wants to cause trouble. The influence of Western vampire stories brought the blood-sucking aspect to the Chinese myth of the vampire in more modern times, in combination of the concept that it's a hungry ghost. Although traditionally you can see the hopping vampires act more like Western zombies. The person that gets killed in the movie that is reanimated quite quickly in the jail cell, that's an example of that. Moon Lee's dad basically becomes a zombie in the film. A supposed source of the Gung Si stories came from a folk practice where traveling companions of or family members who could not afford wagons or had very little money would hire Taoist priests to transport corpses of their friends or family members who died far away from home, and they would travel these diseased over long distances by teaching them to hop on their own feet. And again, that hopping is the only motion they could do, apparently, due to rigor mortis having set in by that time. And they hopped back to their hometown for proper burial. They would transport these corpses only at night and would ring bells to notify other pedestrians of their presence, because it was considered bad luck for a living person to set eyes upon a hopping vampire. And the final note from Wikipedia, and I find this rather amusing, actually, because it usually takes decades for an unattended, resentful corpse to become a hopping vampire, they are usually depicted wearing clothes identified with the previous dynasty. So you usually see in these movies them having Qing dynasty imperial officials wear these long robes. But that may have been derived from that anti-Qing statement or sentiment that you usually see in these movies. You know, many of these martial arts movies are set during the Han Dynasty, which, or rather, it's set from the perspective of the Han people, and they always were, you know, fighting against those damn Qing bastards, as the wonderful Kung Fu quote usually goes. What I almost forgot when doing this research is to mention a little bit about the started and quickly aborted Mr. Vampire Western remake, known under the title Demon Hunters. And it was shot in Hong Kong at Golden Harvest, and I'm not sure who took the initiative, but regardless, because there's no definite truth on the Demon Hunters remake, but they did abandon it after only maybe a few days filming, because the Lam Ching Ying role that Yun Hwa instead got, it created problems because Yun Hwa didn't speak English. And it's kind of strange that they didn't check that beforehand.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, Golden Harvest is not a small studio that just, before lunch comes up with an idea, and after lunch they're into production. I mean, there must have been some pre-production time. But it reportedly starred Jack Scalia, who was a regular on Dallas and Remington Steel, or one of the seasons of those respective series. Tanya Roberts was apparently on the last season of Charlie's Angels, maybe in a Moon Lee role. It's such a shame there's no footage readily available of this. Maybe it's all burnt. Shame there was no production photos taken of it, because I would love to see what that looked like.
Oh, I know. Even if I hated it, I'd love it. I'd absolutely love to see something that just... good stuff.
Yeah. But... I'll shut up because I need to shut up for a while and have a sip of tea. But first time watching the movie, if you track back a little bit to your first time watching the movie, what was your impression back then? And I'll start with you, Amber. What do you remember about Mr. Vampire?
I think I was watching a whole series of Hong Kong horror movies, and I think I started with like Ghost Snatchers and Spooky and stuff like that, and then I got into the Mr. Vampire because I knew it was going to be an undertaking because I wanted to try to watch him in a row. Mm-hmm. But it was the first time I had seen Lam Ching Ying in a starring role, and I immediately understood the appeal of the One Eye About Priest. Obviously, he's so fantastic. And actually, I totally, I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, but Chin Soo Ho, I totally thought he was really fun in the movie.
The star that never really was.
Yeah, never. But then I heard that he, had some run-ins with the law or something regarding, filming women's panties or something.
What?
And I didn't feel so bad. Yeah, oh, you've never heard that.
No, holy shit, what's this?
Yeah, something about he got arrested because he was on escalators or something, holding a camera under women's skirts. And he got into some big trouble. And then
now I know where they stole that plot device from in that four-hour Japanese movie. What was it, Love Love Exposure?
Yeah.
I did not know. Have you heard of that
song? Oh, in
your mind. Yeah, that got posted on the old review site I had done before on their forums. They had a big post about it, and it kind of just disappeared after a while. There wasn't a resolution or a punishment. Or
yeah, I never saw anything. I never saw it, actually legitimately... on any news site or anything like that.
But it seems like Hong Kong press are all over these things. Like, Edison Chen never got a chance to breathe. Everything he said with his scandal was publicized everywhere. Chin Soo Ho kind of probably just got a slap in the wrist.
And yeah, I'm sure.
On his way.
His career did seem to go, really downhill after that, I guess. But or around that time, I guess. But
when is it said this might have occurred? Recently, or 10 years ago, 15 years?
I think it was more than 10 years. Oh, really? I thought it was in the 90s, maybe, or no?
It was first reported back on my old site, when that site was still open. That was around 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
That could have just been when someone first came across the article. I've not got an exact date on when this started, but his career kind of grinded to a halt after 2001. And then picked up for 2006, but he'd only ever since 2001, he's only done 4 movies. So if I had a guess, I would say maybe about that time.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Wow. And, I'm kind of speechless now.
Well, it could be totally not true.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Like I said, but, it does make sense, I guess, if you look at his career from that point.
I've had a great, thought of this when looking at him. Did he really have the chops to break out, to become a great, great, great leading man? And I think, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe he had a 6 or 7 to me, because he has what it takes, but he's not quite there. Not quite. Maybe he needed a singing career really, to amp his image, you know, for people to like.
He's kind of pretty. He's kind of a pretty guy, you know. I don't know. Maybe singing would have been ideal.
Even like the likes of Ricky Hoy in Mr. Vampire, he was a singer as well. So you don't really need the, you know, the classic pretty face indeed to become a good singer.
I guess that's true.
but back in the day when you watched this, did you watch it dubbed by any chance in English? Have you ever seen it in
English? No, right. I watched it with the white double subtitles, the VHS copy, or maybe Laserdisc, I think is what I got a hold of.
Right.
But I was grateful for that.
This, as you said, it made an impression on you. Lam Ching Ying, mm-hmm. you know, stood out immediately. But what else can you think of that really, you know, made it a long-lasting classic in your book and one you return to frequently? What was it about it? I mean, the mix, certainly, of all those martial arts and the comedy and the...
I think it was the first movie I had really experienced the hopping vampires, you know, as being the, you know, the main, you know, crux of the good guys, I guess. And I think I never really questioned their Ching outfit. So that's really interesting. I just always assumed that that's what looked the coolest on the hopping vampires. Yeah. And they're just so goofy. It's just so impossible to really be scared by something that's hopping like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just love the mix of kung fu and horror and, and comedy. It just works so well for me. It does the trick.
And it kind of grows over the years. The more you get familiar with the players in the movie, mm-hmm. the cast and the sets and the conventions of the genre, it really makes it stand out as one mm-hmm. of the best the older it gets.
Yeah, and I think if you watch more movies with those elements afterwards that clearly took a little something from the movie, it makes you appreciate it a little bit more, too.
I'll tell you, from my perspective, watching these Category 3 movies and stuff like that, whenever they had them in those movies, it really was, you know, 100,000 times more cheaper. They could barely hold their teeth in sometimes. And maybe I'll someday talk of the fact that, I'm going to mention it now briefly. Collecting these adult movies, you sometimes run into the strangest things, and there is actually a hopping vampire porn movie out there.
Of course there is.
Produced in
Hong Kong. I should hope so.
Yep. And and I'm not talking the softcore porn. There's actually...
Oh.
That's the angle. And when I saw that, I'm... Well, hello? But really, 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 really cheap. No known actors in it. It's one of those ones that were produced on the fringe. They're far away from me. But you know, you never expected to see that. Ghoul Sex Squad, it's called.
Wow.
Yep. First time watching this movie. Was it VHS days, TV, or DVD?
It was the UK's Hong Kong Legend DVD.
Right.
I had first heard of the movie through the other Hong Kong Legend titles, and that came as like one of the trailers of their other features. And it's like, shit, it had like the serious music with the dubbing over it, and like, shit, I need to find this one. And of course, I eventually found it, paid about £15 for it, but at that time, it was like, sure, DVDs were expensive, but each of these films were like guaranteed gold.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at that time, Hong Kong Legends did no wrong, and of course, we watched it, and at that time, I was still far too used to my dubbing, so I sat through the crazy, crazy dubbing, which I think I will like intersplice throughout the show.
You got to explain that a little, because it is a new dub done for that DVD, but they put an unusual angle into it on occasion. If you want to explain what that is.
Yeah, on say about three or four occasions, it has sort of like these fourth dimensional like references, where to the point where they're in the dub and they actually mention the movie's script or the movie's budget. Like, Ricky Hoy's wanting to get taken to hospital, and like Lam Ching saying, the hospital's like, there's not a hospital in town. He's like, but Sifu, come on, I need a hospital. And he's like, this is a low budget movie, you're not going to hospital, quit. And he's like, and you laugh at first because it's like, what?
Where did that come from?
Exactly. And they start throwing in like references to the Democrats or mentioning American newspapers, and it's just out of left field. But I've grown so used to it. I've probably watched that with a dubbing maybe about five times now, and like, it's so easy to watch is one of these films that I could tell. This is the second copy of Mr. Vampire, because the first disc eventually broke down last year after being watched so fucking much. I'm so glad I'm like marrying a woman that actually had a copy of Mr. Vampire. Like, she saved me.
Marry me!
That's kind of beautiful.
That and Shadow of the Bear Tomorrow box set, which now I'll print.
Well, she is a fan of Chowing Fat, so so Mr. Vampire must have been a random purchase. So does she like
Yep, me and my friends, her family ended up watching that movie and really enjoying it. Like, she used to borrow my movies and play them at her house. And it was just mostly leaving on the TV in the living room, and all they would just end up sitting down and watching it.
doing like double takes when they pause the TV.
Mm-hmm, like her final was just, the vampire one was actually no half bad.
Yeah.
So it works on all audiences, all generations. There's still it still appeals to everyone.
Hell yeah, and it's that's the key really for Mr. Vampire that it's. It's not lost its power, because that they tried the most with this movie production-wise, and I mean, it really took only a few movies to nail that entertainment factor. I mean, a few movies leading up to Mr. Vampire, and then Mr. Vampire is just pitch perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Is really admirable in that regard, and Ricky Lau as a director, previously a cinematographer. One of the few cases where cinematographers make good directors.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't really went into filmmaking territory where he tried to be all important. Ricky Lau wanted to make entertaining genre movies, and this was the genre he excelled at. Again, the other movies, if you look at Ricky Lau's filmography, the likes of Hunted Hunter with Yuen Biu, a very late 90s movie, I think, doesn't look appealing at all.
Mm.
And kind of shame, but still, I've always said, even if you have like one classic movie on your resume in whatever capacity you're working in, front of or behind the camera, I mean, it's a job well done. I mean, to have something in cinema history that people appreciate, you know, each new generation appreciates, that's something to, you know, die happily knowing.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think I saw it on the Made in Hong Kong VHS that was released in the UK in the 90s, because it really was my first exposure to Hong Kong movies, was via that label, Made in Hong Kong, which released many wonderful movies like City on Fire and Tiger on Beat. Not Tiger on the Beat, Tiger on Beat. It's very important to note, that's the title of the movie.
Oh.
Yeah, on the original print, it's Tiger on Beat, and I
totally didn't know that.
And it's much charming when it's grammatically incorrect, these titles. Mm. They gave me A Better Tomorrow free, I remember, once was one of my favorites that I watched, I think, in like 96, because I remember there was an Olympics of sorts going on at the same time, and I would rather watch my Hong Kong movies all throughout the night, because that was, you know, I had my marathon at the beginning. Mm. And Mr. Vampire eventually came out, and I think I'd seen Magic Cop, the 1992 movie with Lam Ching Ying as the more modern day Mr. Vampire before. This guy's presence just blew me away, and he was just it. He was the guy, and I probably got wind of Mr. Vampire somehow. Maybe it was, you know, actually seeing that Made in Hong Kong released a movie called Mr. Vampire. I recognized that name. That's mine. I'm getting that.
You saw Magic Cop first?
Yeah. Which is a great movie to start with, also, because it's, you know, as creative as it gets with all you see in these movies, even when it's not featuring hopping vampires, which this does not.
It's modern, too, which when I first saw it, I was a change.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of times,
That wonderful poster image of Lam Ching Ying in the cop outfit, which he never wears in the film, but I always loved the mix in the poster of, you know, you have a ghoul or a demon and Lam Ching Ying in a cop outfit, and that's just sold right there. but it was literally unwatchable, though, because the cinema subtitles on Magic Cop has always been extremely faded, but you really don't need, you know, a full set of subtitles for that movie to enjoy it, because it's a visual movie, really. And rest is history after I watched Mr. Vampire and got through them all eventually on DVD, I think 2 through 4, and all the various offshoots and the spin-offs and imitations starring or not starring Lam Ching Ying. But it really, for me, that trend in Hong Kong cinema was watchable regardless of Lam Ching Ying was in it or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have, I don't know, let's say Mr. Vampire 4 that doesn't have Lam Ching Ying. Mm-hmm. It's still wonderfully creative and watchable because it's Hong Kong cinema energy and creativity and flow. They're on a roll. They were on a roll for a few years. Mm-hmm. So I can't really think of any other examples that didn't star Lam Ching Ying, but...
I actually kind of, and I know I'm probably the only one, but I actually, is it New Mr. Vampire? Is that the one where the very pretty vampire does everything that Shin Soo-ho does? That's, yeah. New Mr. Vampire, right?
Yes.
I kind of liked it. I know a lot of people don't really like that movie, but I kind of did. That didn't have Lin Ching Ying in it, right?
That aspect was dead on hilarious to see Pauline Wong. It's actually the reuniting of Shin Soo-ho and Pauline Wong from Mr. Vampire.
But she's pretty great.
That was just gold concept for me. That I'm surprised they didn't echo in 12 other movies.
Right.
I've only seen it in that one, and again in Spooky Encounters to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've read several reviews of that movie, and they haven't been positive. So maybe everybody didn't really enjoy
It's okay. It's good. I only reacted. Out of all things, I thought the movie was kind of towards the end. Again, very enjoyable movie, but the movie was loud. It was kind of gratingly loud during the ending at the house with them fighting with that particular vampire. But still, you know, a movie I could rewatch, like many of these genre movies, I could rewatch any time of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's comforting viewing, in a way. It's easy viewing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not you don't need to work yourself up to it. Like for me personally, when trying to take on a classic, let's say Seven Samurai or something, it's not a movie I can just turn on and watch
a bit of. It's not necessarily relaxing either.
Exactly, for 3 hours, nonetheless. Very few movies deserve a 3 hour, you know, one sit through in one go. Touch of Zen is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love a movie inspired by that. Collection of horror stories I mentioned at the top.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to run through a little bit slightly scene by scene or a few highlights from Mr. Vampire, because that's the way I do my notes. I write down what I like about every three or fourth scene, essentially. And I love the beginning because it kind of it obviously sets up the hopping vampires, the kind of feeling we're going to get for the movie. But so many years on, I've started to watch the beginning of Mr. Vampire as a James Bond intro, almost, to our hero, you know, our new hero, new kind of hero. And obviously, I don't think they designed it in that way, Ricky Lau or producer Sammo Hung. But now, I like that fact because he pops into frame about 4 or 5 minutes in when chaos has ensued and these bumbling idiot... disciples Ricky Hoi and Chin Si Ho have let loose all the vampires, but it's a perfect scene to draw audiences in. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They don't wait to reveal the hopping vampire 20 minutes into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Here they are. You've seen them before, but you've never seen them like this before.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna make an impact on you now. And also, you got to admire Ricky Lau as a director because he knows the beats of the scene. It's not sloppy filmmaking. This, I mean, it may sound simple, but the various shots of the candle that needs to be lit in order for the vampires to not move. When it goes out, they start to float a little side to side. This is just a you know, wonderful beginning and start of an easy 90 plus minutes, whatever it is, 95 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to move on to Lam Ching Ying's comedic skills. It goes sadly unmentioned, but is beloved. And it really starts with that scene where him and Ricky Hoi are going to drink Western tea. And none of them knows what the customs are. And I my forever favorite moment is not during the scene where they put sugar in the custard tart and drink the cream or milk right out of the little container it's in. It's before, when Lam Ching Ying is speaking to himself that, I don't know anything about this. I don't know how to drink Western tea. Hope he knows. Breaking that stoic shell that he has. So, what's your thought on him as a comic or comedic inclusion, Amber?
I think because he is so serious all the time that it, whenever he breaks, you know, it's extra hilarious. I think I saw an interview. I watched an interview on YouTube with Shin Soo-ho, and he talked about how he was just really just a serious guy, I guess, a lot on set and everything. And it kind of makes it even more funny when he kind of, you know, almost breaks character and, you know. And I think that's a really endearing scene, too, where he, you know, they're just kind of watching to see what everyone else does. And you can see this, the, you know, the fear on his face, sort of, that he's going to just totally blow it. And that's kind of something you don't really see. So confident in everything. And then just drinking tea is, you know, blowing his mind.
it's so cute in a way, to see him, you know, eyes wide open.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm on shaky ground right now and I don't like it.
And, you could just tell he doesn't like to be humiliated, obviously, so he's just nervous.
And he still has that minor grip on his disciple, you know, he can still tell him to, you know, be quiet you.
Mm-hmm.
But still, he's very vulnerable in that scene. But yeah, still, we've been speaking about, again, Dead of the Deadly many times, but what's your general thought, despite on Lam Ching Ying, the funny?
It just comes as a welcome relief to those moments where, like, you get the image of most masters just being this offy, cold character that people have a hard time relating to because it's a student you often feel sorry for.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just reversed in this case, like, to kind of hide his embarrassment, he'll torture his students. Like, it was for when they... I think it was after the makeup scene with Chin Soo-ho mistaken Moon Lee for a prostitute, and when they both walk out to the shop and Lam Ching Ying tells them off. So Ricky Hoy decides to dance about acting like a chicken just to bring attention and then just to have his master slap him. So Lam Ching Ying gains this respect in the public eye again.
Yes.
So all the embarrassment he's suffered is gone and it's just all transferred to Ricky Hoy.
Yeah, and it really speaks to the fools that they are, the disciples. They really have the... You know, no. They start to act first and think later, if that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have again the beginning scene, that scene where he just when he acts as a chicken on the street and all of that stuff. They are kids really, despite this being 20 plus men or 30 plus in Ricky Hoy's case. I don't know. He might have been young because Ricky Hoy has looked that way forever and ever. So
totally, he's one of those guys who has always looked old, kind of. You know, he's always been a middle-aged guy. You know, he's got that face, those bags under his eyes.
Yeah. If any of you ever saw, I think you saw it, Stu, the Riley Ip movie, Matada Fumaka, where with Eric Tsang and Nick Che, as where the movie where Eric Tsang has Alzheimer's.
Oh, I missed that one.
Right. Well, regardless, there's a flashback to Eric Tsang's, you know, when he was a young triad. And in that flashback, it's Stephen Fung as Eric Tsang. But as a matter of fact, and this is not spoiling anything, it's actually his romanticized version of what it was like when he was young. Because if you see Eric Tsang as young, he looked like Eric Tsang and nothing else. So I'm sure it's true with Ricky Hoy. Maybe he was 32 or something like this when Mr. Vampire was made.
And that's the thing, even Lam Ching Ying actually looks relatively young. It could be the cleaned up state of the DVDs, as we mentioned before, kind of reveals the flaw in the makeup. But yeah, it's like, it almost looks, you could probably guess that they just dyed his hair lighter and then give him like a miscolored mustache and fake eyebrow. It's like, his, like, to his face, like, the dude still looks actually quite young.
Mm-hmm. I loved it when they would just in Hong Kong cinema where they make young men old and they think that if, you know, if you just put some white in the hair, like your disbelief is completely suspended. And at first I thought it was completely ridiculous, but now I just go with it, you know, just go with it.
Yeah, there's certainly City Hunter, I believe, is one such case where they double Richard Norton with Mars, and they just spray a little bit of white in Mars's hair, and there you go. Yeah, if you watch the movie, the doubling isn't that serious, but when you see the outtakes, you can see Jackie fighting Mars, and you realize how ridiculously, you know, small amounts of time they spent on, like Mars. Okay, in. Fight. But still, they know how to hide their wires and doubling and all of that stuff. So it's, and I agree with you, Amber. It's not something that I stop and, you know, start to dislike a movie. I just go with the flow, go with the flow.
Yeah.
Actually, looking it up, Ricky Hoy is actually 5 years older than Lam Ching Ying.
Wow.
Lam, I guess that explains it.
Lam born in 51 and Ricky was actually born in 46.
Holy.
Oh. Well, I have seen him in the background of some other Shaw Brothers movies and stuff too, but even then he looked kind of he's got that kind of sad sack look where he always looks a little bit defeated. You know, so maybe it's hard to tell because he just has that kind of sad dog face.
Yeah, he's kind of the Snoopy equivalent. Just that hanging face. But the thing is, they dressed him up like a child in Mr. Vampire. It was almost like a children's costume he was always around in, like, the real, like, bright orange and green clothing. But he was obviously older than both Lam Ching Ying and Chin Soo Ho.
Oh, much older.
That's never stopped Hong Kong filmmakers. Hello, Drunken Master 2.
I think most elders are all determined by height.
Yeah.
Because even Chin Soo Ho had like superiority over Ricky Hoy. Just because he was a short ass in the group. You're the kid one.
No wonder Eric Tsang gets bullied in the various movies then with the My Lucky Stars and all of that. So, short, rotund one. But it fit for Ricky Hoy. It fit in the trio of the Hoy brothers trio with Michael and Sam. It really, that was his kind of role as the, not punching bag, but the one that was kind of abused. I mean, the private eyes, he has that neck brace all throughout the movie. So he's been abused at some time in that movie. But it kind of is, he gets to shine his Security Unlimited. Where he's a little bit better than Michael Hoy, who's always the, you know, the braggart, the loudmouthed out of the group. And Sam was the good-looking one. The Kung Fu good-looking one. But Private Eyes and Security Unlimited, by the way, Hoy brothers comedies that are definite musts for anyone interested in Hong Kong cinema comedy.
I haven't watched any of their films together. And until, I can't remember... I saw that Ricky Hoy sang the theme song to a couple of the movies that I had seen. Until then, I didn't even realize that he had, you know, that was...
Him and Sam were, you know, mainly, but I think they all sang. And the theme to Private Eyes is wonderful regardless, but wonderful because of the fact that there's an English language version of that theme that they all sing. And it has wonderful lyrics. And so look that up on YouTube, Private Eyes theme, and I think you'll hear the English one as well.
Great.
But their themes were great, great, great.
And, I think he did the Haunted Cop Shop 2 song or something like that, too. And I think part of it was strangely in English, you know, like kind of drifting in and out of...
Right. I never remember the theme song for Haunted Cop Shop 2, but I love those movies. And Haunted Cop Shop 2 is... basically, Hong Kong Police Academy with supernatural elements.
Yeah. Oh. Works for me.
Absolutely. It's great. recommendation to you, Stu, if you can find the Haunted Cop Shop movies. The first one is out on Joy Sales DVD, I believe, and the second one is buried on a VCD somewhere. You got to talk a little bit about Yuen Wah as well, because I didn't know until recent years, basically the DVD that came out in the UK explained that Yuen Wah plays in certain shots or quite a bit the vampire, the premium hopping vampire, because I think there's two in this movie, and you can see him mostly in the scene where they move the coffin, and they open the coffin, and there you can see Yunhua sans a lot of makeup. And it's a shame that he doesn't get more credit, but I hope as the older the movie gets, the more people remember the movie for Yunhua as well. Because it's the physicality involved that I think, he could move, and move in that stiff way require probably a lot of strength, and be under that heavy, heavy makeup. It's kind of crude. It's that rotting corpse makeup, obviously, but still, I think someone talked in the interview, maybe Chin Si-ho or Moon Lee, that Yunhua was always at to the side and not doing much and not hanging out with anyone else because no one really wanted to hang out with him either because of superstition or that's just the way it went and he had to sit in his makeup and wait until it was his turn.
That really bums me out. That's totally sad.
Because maybe there was superstition involved in that regard that, whoever's the ghost or the demon or the vampire, you bully him. Upset. Maybe not that harsh, but it kind of sounded like that to me. But Yunhua, what a hero. And still, I haven't seen the Kung Fu Mahjong movies that he made after Kung Fu Hustle, but still, one of those characters that got his due in the 80s and 90s and globally, finally, after post-millennium with Kung Fu Hustle and all of that. So, and these were the two action directors on the film. So that's the aspect I want to talk a little now, because there's not a lot of Kung Fu action per se, but there's the Taoist priest routines at the altar action.
Yeah, like, I think I may have been surprised at how little Kung Fu there was, considering that, everyone in the film almost is, completely capable of doing all kinds of crazy action. Mm-hmm. I think that, I think the most, challenging thing I saw was like Chin Su-ho jumping off of a wall or something like that. And that lasted for maybe, 30 seconds of real super action. I mean, it didn't, mar the enjoyability of it at all, but I was kind of surprised, that there was just, there wasn't very much.
Well, he certainly jumps about more, I think more than you actually think, because I studied the movie, tried to study the movie, and I reacted to the fact that all the action, the altar action is shot with such a pitch-perfect energy, if you will. The cuts, the editing, whenever Lam draws a bit of blood and unfortunately cuts the neck and the head of a chicken, and all the fast cuts at the altar, I've always been totally fascinated by, because again, Lam Ching Ying was meant for this role.
Yeah.
And it's all of that, knowing the angles, knowing the editing in these kind of scenes, and in particular in the scene in the jail where they chase newly reanimated vampire zombie.
Right, yeah.
It's the moment where Lam Ching Ying, he snaps his fingers, lights like the little paper on fire, and throws it on the corpse. I think before he's put the sword in the heart of the zombie. And all of that, like boom, 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 that kind of cutting and that kind of action, that's what I really admired upon when watching the movie this time around.
That movie is really edited well. It's shot surprisingly well. I think I had seen maybe some subpar. Yeah, I was really reaching by the point that I watched that movie. And you'll just watch anything, that you can find in a genre. Even if it's bad, you're just gonna have more of it. And I think by the time I saw that, it was such a breath of fresh air. It was so professionally made. I think at the beginning there's like a scene where, Ricky Hui's like, he's got the incense, and then they pan over and you just see all of the vampires in a row.
Yeah.
And then the music is cued. And I remember thinking that was just so cool. What a great shot. And
yeah, it's exactly my, when I wrote my review finally a few years ago, after I'd started the review site, I finally caught up with Mr. Vampire, and it's one of those classics that I wanted to write a review about. I usually stay away from the classics that people have said so much about already.
Right, right.
But I love this genre too much to, you know, keep those words inside me. So one of the first keywords that came out of me was it tries. It's the one that tried. Mm-hmm. The Golden Harvest sets didn't mean automatic production quality. You need to, you know your shots and know how to utilize that. And Ricky Lau was one of those directors that knew how to shoot movies and obviously direct, again, a genre movie like this, a fast-paced, fun genre movie like mm-hmm. this. And one of my favorite shots is maybe in the middle of the movie, there's the vampire just flies away and essentially flies away into the background of the set. It's just wonderful. Uh-huh. It just basically takes off like Superman and yeah. disappears in the darkness. And it's one of those, it's probably a dummy on a wire. Mm-hmm. It looks so cool. It just flies away like a torpedo. And then it's gone.
Right. They stick their arms out and then they just cruise.
Exactly. and it doesn't look, actually it doesn't look hokey at all, because it's done with, obviously it's sped up to a very cool degree. So it's not like, mm-hmm. see you guys. And he moves slow into the darkness. It's shoom.
Yeah.
So it's really, you don't need to look at the movie that way. But when you start to examine the details a little bit, you realize how well it's made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he directed Close Encounters of the Spooky Kind too, didn't yes. he, as well? Yeah, I really like that movie too. I think he did. And I think he did Where's Officer Tuba, right?
I think so. I haven't seen that. I think it was either same year, just after, just before mm-hmm. Mr. Vampire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all good for me. All good
yeah.
movies.
Yeah. Do check out Nocturnal Demon just to, again, to see that contrasts in Hong Kong cinema filmmaking. That's the most disturbing elements come in the opening reel, where it's like, oh, Nocturnal Demon, this is not fun anymore. This is disturbing. What the hell? But now Moon Lee is on her roller skates and fighting people. That's cute.
Yeah, so, yeah. You got to stick some cute in there.
Exactly. Going back a little to the comedy in the film, it's because if you compare the comedy in this film to, for instance, the various My Lucky Stars movies, mm-hmm. and it's not, you know, essentially you can boil it down to this. This movie doesn't have broadness or loudness in the IR vein.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
it isn't like the horny idiots, My Lucky Stars idiots, running around trying to bed every woman they see. It's
which could be why, I guess, like Stu was saying, like people who don't normally watch these kind of movies enjoy it. Because I found that when you show, you know, you're such a nerd for the genre, you don't you're so into it, you don't realize that other people might not understand or relate, you know, the weird cultural differences and just the loud, you know, and very expressiveness that Mr. Vampire somehow seems, you know, to connect with people who don't normally like these kind of movies, which is something to be said in itself.
I think the key is that they create comedy out of the situations properly, rather mm-hmm. than, you know, again, you have the Western tea scene. They mm-hmm. they create a scenario out of that situation and not the scenario where it's like pie in the face kind of humor. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's true for many comedic scenarios in the film. And it leads to basically favorite scene out of the movie, and I'm gonna mention the scene where Lam Ching Ying fights Pauline Wong that has possessed Chin Siu Ho, and that mix of, now we're into effects territory, you know, the animated effects, the crude but still disgusting makeup on Pauline Wong as she turns her head to reveal that, and the comedy within that is obviously her making sure that Chin Siu Ho sees Billy Lau instead of Lam Ching Ying, so Chin Siu Ho obviously fights back against his master. So you have situational comedy, great action, and special effects all coming together, and editing mm-hmm. and angles and energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I always regard that as my favorite scene of the movie because it starts a final half hour of the movie that never lets up. What scene or scenario stands out in your mind, Amber, from Mr. Vampire?
Actually, around that point on, but I think it starts. I start really enjoying when Lam Ching Ying is trying so hard to get to Pauling Wong and Shin Soo Ho sort of throwing her around, you know, kind of getting her out of the way. And I love the ballet danciness of some of the kung fu like that. So once that starts, you know, just from there is the best part of the movie for me.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Stu, in terms of favorite scene or sequence?
Well, it's hard to mention that scene there. Almost kind of comes across as the most. It's like a kung fu comedy, but it's supposed to be horror, and that could be easily like the closest scene where it does look a little bit scary with, like, all the B movie horror moments where the head flies across the room and like the melted face, and like that's probably when it gets its most extreme. Like that is like the most surprising scene, and even though she's not even like the main protagonist. Bad guy. So like it's the vampires the focus of the film, but like it has this crazy ass subplot about the succubus, which as we've said is like people have went with the vampire trend more than the succubus like entrapping the disciple.
Mm-hmm.
But many scenes I love is like it's the opening scene when the vampires go loose and it's Lam Ching Ying and Anthony Chan jumping in, and it's just that quick 2 minute scene of Lam Ching Ying like physically disabling each other with like high kicks, strong punches, and Anthony Chan's like worried because these are his clients that are getting damaged.
Yeah.
He's quickly just trying like lowering them down gently, and Lam Ching Ying knocks one out with a punch. It's like so I just like love scenes like that, and it's the great music that accompanies the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like this wee hijinks music that kind of often reminds me of like the old Cluedo movie, like from the 80s.
That's right.
So many scenes like that I just watch over and over. I think it's like those short bursts of action are just always like sort of when your eyes light up.
You know, but by the time you hit that first hour and that scene hits with Pauly Wong's head detaching and the animated effects now taking center stage, I think it's a statement scene for 7 or 8 years. This is what you're going to see for 7 or 8 years. And
mm-hmm.
But it never was as good, really, as that last half hour of Mr. Vampire. Much is great, but nothing was, you know, as perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that brings me to like another small question. I've never heard anyone really complain about animated effects in Hong Kong movies. But I love them, and I think they're very, very creative when you get little cartoons on screen. For like when Lam Ching Ying does whatever he does to the coin sword. I think he uses the mirror, uses the moon that reflects through the mirror, and then he lights up the coin sword. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way to do that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So I love that stuff. What's your thought on that, Amber?
I, you know, being a practical effects artist and stuff like that, I have, you know, just a natural aversion towards, you know, CG and... Mm-hmm. And things like that. But honestly, you know, just looking at the stuff, you know, comparatively, it just looks better to just animate it traditionally sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes it's just it's a better way to do it. Besides the fact that it's kind of charming, you know, even though you're fully aware that it's animated, it's handmade and there's something, you know, comforting about seeing it. You know, I think that's part of why those 80s movies are so fun. It's a mix of completely practical and, you know, hand-drawn, animated, you know, over-the-cells kind of effects, which, like, is so endearing, you know, and impressive. Like, I'm always impressed when I see something like that that works so well.
Yeah, it takes a certain something to, because it's not, you know, crude animation when it's done in the likes of Mr. Vampire.
Right.
I always like that. I found it outrageous and kind of fun when they use the animation in exploitation movies such as Evil Cat and Curse, where the animation animation raped the whatever female was in the movie, you know what I mean? Because you had demons and all that stuff. But then again, Hong Kong movies were not guilty of that, you know, first on the block. I mean, Evil Dead, albeit they did it was a practical effect with the woods raping one of the women. That was an Evil Dead first, so don't blame Hong Kong movies for exploiting.
There was an awful movie I think I saw went on like I don't know, a cable network when I was a kid called I think it was called Evil Toons, and I think it was just completely animated characters raping women, and
was it Japanese by any chance?
Absolutely not. Really? It was 100% American, you know, so, yeah.
Hello.
It's not totally new, yeah. See, I think it might have had, like, Linnea Quigley or something like that in it. I can't quite remember, but it, you know, raping cartoons always kind of in my psyche now forever.
Hong Kong movies pale in comparison, therefore.
Yeah, they're not alone. They're not alone.
So on that note, Stu, you and animated effects. What's that like for you? You like that?
I thought there were just like these golden little touches to the actual movie. It does give, like, at first you could probably like see some people getting like a slight comedic effect that it's been so retro. Like if you forget the fact that the movie is from the 80s, but it's like when Lam Ching Ying wipes his eyes with like ivy leaves, and it's almost sort of like the wee electronic charge, and you hear like the old Atari sound effects. And it's like ding, and now he's like able to see what happens. And again, we're like charging the sword with the moonlight, and it's like especially like, effects like that are fucking awesome. I just it's
and it leads into that scene again that mixes all of that, you know, practical effects and the physicality of the performers, and every now and again a little post production magic as well. But then again, I watch a lot of violent and extreme movies, but there's few times that I kind of flinch. And Mr. Vampire is one of those times where I kind of flinch at the makeup in the various scenes, the various wounds, especially the arm wounds on Ricky Hoi after he's been was stabbed with the long fingernails, presumably. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's on screen ever. But when you see that those arm wounds, they are these messy, probably pussy messes. And it's like Lam Ching Ying even tears a piece off and check if he feels pain. Nah, I don't. Oh, shit. And that's kind of, again, it looks crude, but whoa, is that effective. So the movie goes into that scary territory as well, because it might be scary to see Ricky Hoi transform into a vampire. And in the end, it's not really that scary. It's more it's more kooky to see Ricky Hoi gradually transform into the vampire. And also doing a little Peking opera performance to hide the fact that he's becoming paler and paler. So he starts dancing in front of Lam Ching Ying, and he's like, shakes his head. Up on the bed, dance. Dance on the mix of sticky rice and real rice. I flinch at that scene where he peels off that piece of skin from him. It's like...
You're falling to pieces already.
Is that a bad sign?
Well, it's not a good sign. Let's try the snake ointment. If this stuff doesn't work out, well, you're a goner.
Huh? What about a hospital?
Hey, this is a small village. There's no hospital near here.
Can you take me to one?
This is a low-budget film. I'm telling you, we don't have one.
Then what do I got to do?
To do? Get up and breakdance, idiot.
So finally for Mr. Vampire, kind of going out on a downer, I guess. But what did you remember, if anything at all, about when you heard that Lam Ching Ying passed away? I mean, I don't know if you heard exactly when it happened, or did you find out years later? What do you remember about that, Amber?
Oh, I found out years later. I obviously, when I saw him for the first time, I went and like on his Hong Kong Cinemagic page and just wanted to watch everything that he had done. And when I had seen that he had passed away, I was extremely disappointed. Because when you realize that you're never going to see something new from, you know, a great actor, it's always a kind of a letdown.
Mm-hmm. It's strangely emotional, really. Mm-hmm. That was my experience, kind of. I'd only seen Magikop at that time. I don't think I'd even seen Mr. Vampire, and still, because of that impression, that you know that I know it, that he was it. He was the guy to have for the role,
mm-hmm.
and despite knowing that afterwards that he had so many immortal roles and dramatic mm-hmm. roles, even Painted Faces and School on Fire and the regular movies, if you will, it was strangely emotional, and I was literally bummed out mm-hmm. for like a day. but that means, you know, an impression, an imprint have been made. And people always say, well, why you cry over celebrities or movie stars when people are dying every day? But, you know, true, that is true. But some things, have a more direct impact on you. You'd seen this guy in movies and liked him.
Sure.
So it was a direct impact in a way, even though I didn't go and, I didn't wear a black armband or anything like that. And people wondering, well, who are you mourning? Did anyone die in your family? But, being a movie fan and in awe of someone's work, of course, mm-hmm. of course you get emotional. And,
sure, and he seems so strong, too. You know, he was always so, you know, such a badass that that makes it kind of, you know, more disappointing.
Mm. What about you, Stu?
I could see what Amber says by, like, you feel upset that you can't actually find anything new or coming from that, obviously, since he's passed. But I think in the other way, in the sense that I think I'd discovered it when either reading up on Eastern Condors or Mr. Vampire, because being the first movies with him in it, actually, it might have actually been My Lucky Stars, with him being one of the villains. Audio commentary, I'm pretty sure, had mentioned his passing in that, but I think it opened up the door in the sense that there's so many great performances of his I haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd seen My Lucky Stars, and he stood out the most because he was this badass villain. And then I realised it's the same guy for Mr. Vampire, the same guy for Prodigal Son. And then it's just discovering all these great performances one after another. Like, after seeing all the Vampire movies, you thought, this is it, he's hit his peak, it's amazing. Then you come across, School on Fire, and your mind's blowing to another level, because he's not the vampire guy now, he's this fucking, this cop, and brains are the wall, mind officially blown, seriously, Ruby's decorated now. It's amazing, jaw-dropping performances. The guy continues to impress me, even, I guess, from the grave. But dude is just I've not seen all his movies yet. I'm pretty sure I did try to see most of them, but I think the majority I had left were all these ones that were just extras. He was going to be the guy in the background. There wasn't many starring roles left for me to see, but the dude still can continue to stun people with many great performances in such little movies. An Eternal Combat is a movie I've watched probably more than I should, but he was great in that movie. That film's probably more obscure compared to some of his favourite ones, but he's fucking great in that one. He turned into a small dog. He's ticking all these different boxes.
And it's his old-timey master in the modern day, because they travel through time to modern 90s. And that's a concept. If I read that on paper, Lam Ching-ying, time travel elements, ends up in modern day, turns into a small dog.
Bites everyone in the ass.
Sold!
I'm in.
And riding an ostrich on the African plains, if you will, in Crazy Safari.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that movie.
The man's done it all.
it's the mix of joy and getting kind of I'm that way. This might sound silly. I get emotional out of pure joy of seeing someone do well on screen, being in awe of someone's work, and you know, I get emotional due to awesomeness.
Mm-hmm. Kind of. Yeah.
And
emotional and, to awesomeness.
Exactly. Exactly. And it doesn't need to be the dramatic movies, as Stu said. It might be the most craziest movie, you know, the crazy movies he did. That might be, you know, that should be in a, you know, a Lifetime Achievement Award montage. You know, just put all the crazy stuff in there and leave out Painted Faces and School on Fire if you need to, and no one would object.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see Rape in Public Sea, by the way.
I've got a copy of that somewhere.
Really? I've been looking for that. He apparently, it's a modern take on Satuichi, essentially, but they edited in, not with Lam Ching Yin, sex scenes afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Sad Story of Saigon at one time, ended up being Rape in Public Sea, but apparently the concept was Lam Ching Yin as a modern day Satuichi, so he plays blind, or in some scenes it doesn't look like he's blind at all. So it apparently is a bit sloppy.
But yeah, I think I was traveling in the right circles at that time to get like the Tai Seng VHS rips onto DVD.
Uh-huh.
So I acquired a copy through somehow.
That will end up as a review and video review on SoGoodReviews.com sometime, because how can I not review Rape in Public Sea?
Exactly. I'll look you up.
Absolutely, but it's great. Have you ever seen Painted Faces and School on Fire, Amber?
I've seen Painted Faces, but not School on Fire.
You need to talk about
that.
It's out on Hong Kong DVD finally, School on Fire. So it's...
I'll have to get on that.
But it may be sad that it's gone, but he's awesome enough to kind of extinguish those sad emotions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at his filmography, it's like 12 movies I could just put on right now at the same time, mm-hmm. just watching.
At the same time, all 12.
Yeah, I'm going to have a 12, you know, split screen, 12, 12 split screen on my TV.
And six of those screens will probably be like a one-eyebrow priest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it will not be tiring at all. Would be awesome.
I was wondering if I wonder if he was at all, you know, resentful or disappointed that so many roles he got was the same character over and over again. If he wanted to branch out at all, you know, and not that I don't love One Eyebrow Priest, you know, but I just wonder if he was just totally ready to do something else.
I would guess probably a mixture, because the performances are so sincere, you know, mm-hmm. they're ass kicking and they're funny. And so I think it's a mixture of it all. I think when you got into the 90s and he made like Mad Ghost and Exorcist Master and all of that, those movies aren't the most inspired and memorable, and it kind of shows as well.
Yeah.
And but he has been quoted as saying, as you know, Painted Faces was his favorite movie or one of his favorite movies. So
mm-hmm.
Alex Law and Mabel Jung, who made that movie, wrote and directed that movie. They gave him a chance. It's a supporting role, but man, it's
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking, mm-hmm. and they're burned into your memory easily. You know, and
mm-hmm.
and him and Samo's climactic scene when Lam Ching Yin goes a little crazy. That's it is heartbreaking. So but we'll have more movies to cover than just Mr. Vampire, thankfully. And hopefully this series could be a nice thing to have on wax, you know, to have immortalized as well, you know, fandom and love for someone, to have that immortalized there. That's kind of fun to throw out there. So speaking of throwing out there, coming up to a little bit of plugging section, maybe putting you on the spot right now, Amber, but... plug whatever you like. If you want to plug, I think I heard, so you had a blog of some sort?
I haven't actually. It's ninjasquid.blogspot, but I haven't visited in a while. I'm going to need to update immediately. I have so many things that I want to talk about, but I always end up just watching another movie instead. You know, just adding to the list and making it a million times harder for myself. But, I mean... You can always find me on Facebook, and there's a link to... I'm a painter also. Like, ultimately, I'd rather just sit around and paint all day. So you find me on Facebook. There's a link to my, you know, online portfolio and and such things, if you want to check those out.
Right. We'll certainly put those links and information in the podcast post so people can have a
awesome.
Look. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to plug in particular, Stu?
I've not really got anything, but I've got a suggestion. Like, actually, Ken, you go for your plug first.
Right, okay.
I'll finish the show with my suggestion.
Right. Friend of the show, John Kreng, has announced that, he put up, or someone put up, a short action movie he worked on. Action director, choreographer, stunt coordinator, John Kreng. And that link is going to be on the podcast post. It's a short movie called How Lin's Groove Kicked In. Cool 5-minute action short. And I rather enjoyed it. It has some cool action, actually, on a minute budget. Clearly not a big shoot, but John really got some cool stuff on screen via very little means. So I recommend everyone to check out How Lin's Groove Kicked In, and hopefully we'll see more from John. Small or big projects, it's going to be cool. And John is a knowledgeable guy and has been generous to the show, so I encourage you all to check out that, and you'll find that link. And you can also search on YouTube, How Lin's Groove Kicked In, and you'll find it easily. And I bet you guys out there who watch it, you're going to fall in love with the lead in that movie, Mary Christina Brown. Because she brings the fun and fury, and she's also very, very beautiful. So that's my unrelated Lam Ching Ying plug. So what was your possible related Lam Ching Ying plugs to?
Okay, unfortunately it's unrelated, but yeah, so vampire season. Obviously we do have like some great suggestions in our like barrel already of ideas, because of course we've got like Mr. Vampire 2 and other ones in the series to kind of cover, but run with me with this one. But next time, Twins Effect. Come on,
really?
Like Ambro, no, it came out there as the Vampire Effect. It's got vampire in the title. You can tell.
You want to do a podcast on your own, Stuart?
Finish the show, Ken.
I don't like that movie. If they edited in crudely Lam Ching Ying and edited out, I don't know, Edison, maybe it will work. I don't know. But you're very right. Released as the Vampire Effect and a cameo by Jackie Chan and all that. But nah, never again.
No, I don't need to watch that ever. I don't think again, really. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. But
there's a flaw in you people.
I've got the best movie genes and you don't. We all have our respective tastes, Stuart, and we're not looking down on yours.
God, no. I like total garbage. Absolute nonsense.
Look at the crap I review on my site, Stu. I mean, every other movie stars Charlie Cho, and every other movie has him having sex with a lot of people. And I write paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs about that. So who's the loser? I do video reviews on that, man, for heaven's sake. So, to put things into perspective, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, thanks everybody for listening, and thank you very much, our special guest Amber, for coming on and speaking about things you love.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's awesome.
And thank you for volunteering, by the way.
No problem.
And I'm Kenneth Bosone, therefore, and with me was
Stuart Sutherland.
And Amber Skronsky.
Okay. See you for part 2, Mr. Vampire 2. Bye.